Reminsky performs in national and international operas with his powerful bass voice. He studied at the Academy of Vocal Arts in Philadelphia. In 2001, Reminsky made his debut at the Metropolitan Opera House. He decided to recently write a book titled Starting to Sing, Book 1, Children and Beginners, to offer advice on the proper way to sing. How do you teach a child how to sing that might have a potential?
Well, that's the first thing. You have to decide whether they have potential or not. So the first voice lesson is an inquiry into that question. You have to test the child in the sense that you play a tone on the piano, and then you ask the child to repeat that tone, to sing it back to you. That's the first sign that there's an ability there to be able to cognate the tone, understand that it's a tone, hear exactly what it is, and to be able to repeat it back. If they can't repeat the tone back, if they sing the wrong tone, we can't jump to the conclusion that they're tone deaf. I'm not a believer in tone deafness. In my book, I call it tone indifference, which is to say that they're not interested or they're not concentrating hard enough. So I've worked with children where I've had to play the tone four or five times for them. And they're looking around the room and they're not concentrating and they're not thinking about it and they just sing whatever comes into their head. But when I've gotten them to focus on the tone, they are able to sing it back. So, you see, if I think that the only person who's tone deaf is a person who has a damage of their ear. Because if you can hear when I say, do you hear me? Do you hear my question? You can hear that my voice goes up. So if you can hear that, that means you're hearing tones and that you know that a tone is happening. So I don't believe that anybody's tone deaf. So with children, you find out what the tone is that they're singing, and then you can start to see how quickly they can respond to the tones.
So if we don't use that phrase correctly, when you do hear someone that really can't sing on key at all, what do you consider that person's problem to
be? The problem is it's the same issue that someone would have that they can't throw a football. You know, I mean, it's just not everybody can do everything. You know, some people have talent with numbers. Some people have talent with colors, with painting. Some people can throw a football. So their brain is not functioning in that area. Maybe that side of their brain or that part of their brain is just not as active as other parts. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them. But if they were to focus hard enough, I do believe that anybody can hear a tone and repeat it. It's just that some people have to work so hard that it's pretty clear that they're not going to be singers.
How young do you start someone to begin singing?
Well, again, this is all chicken and the egg because the children show a propensity for singing very young. Some do, some don't. If they do show a propensity, obviously that's the impetus to get them to a voice teacher to see how much they want to do it. Children who aren't singing at all probably don't want to sing. You know, maybe taking them to see a concert first, or to give them a CD, DVD, let them watch a concert, let them watch some kind of singing, have them listen to the radio, you know. And then if you get something, if there's some kind of interest there, then you can take the next step and bring them in for a voice lesson.
How did it happen for you?
I think that I was always a singer. I always heard music. I always responded to music. From as far back as I can remember, maybe even as early as 3 or 4 years old, I was aware of music. I responded to it. I tried singing. And my father had a lot of record albums in the house. We had these things called vinyl, big black flat things called vinyl records. And you put it on a turntable and put a needle on it. And when it turns, the music comes out of it, you know. Mm-hmm. Some kids won't know what I'm talking about. But I used to listen to many of my father's records. And he had a vast array of military marches. He had Tony Bennett. He had classical music. And I listened to all of it. And I remember starting to sing before kindergarten and in kindergarten.
And then I assume your parents said, okay, we're going to send you for lessons and professional?
I didn't have lessons when I was a kid. And the lessons that I had were involved in singing with church music. So when I was inducted into St. Paul's Cathedral Choir when I was 8, and I was tested by the conductor, and I got a very high score, and he said certainly has the propensity to be able to do this. So I didn't really take any voice lessons. I just sang with the choir, and I started to get feedback. You know, I used to listen to myself, try to listen to everybody else, try to match. And that was my education, really. And I learned how to read notes because I had to. And I was also singing very complicated music because the Episcopalian Church, they utilize the great composers. There, you're singing Mozart and Bach and Brahms and things like that. So I had a classical education from St. Paul's very early.
You have 23 basic outlines of advice in your book. What stands out to you the most that is a simple lift for parents if they're interested?
You have to be clear about your goals. It should be explained to them what is entailed. It's like any other discipline. If you start down this road, it could remain a hobby, but it may become a vocation. It may become your desire to have a career. And my experience is that parents sometimes either take it too far or they don't take it far enough. The other side of it is kids who aren't talented enough and shouldn't be doing it, and parents pushing them and pushing them and pushing them, and they're never going to get any better. And instead of listening to a professional say your child shouldn't be singing, they keep going to every other professional that'll take their money in order to keep letting them sing, and they just shouldn't be doing it.
Well, and what happens when you have the popularity of a show like The Voice?
I'm not a fan of shows like that because I think it creates an unhealthy environment for unhealthy expectations for singers, because, you know, it's not like instant oatmeal. You know, you don't just add hot water and there it is. And a lot of these kids get up there and they have a trick. I call them in the book, I call them one trick ponies. You know, where they learn a song, they hear it on the radio, they copy whatever they're hearing, and then they sing it well, but they have no idea what they're doing in their throat. They don't know what the voice is doing. They can sing that one song or those two or three songs very well, but they have no exercises, no vocalises, nothing to show them what the voice actually, how it works. And if you were to present these kids with another song that they don't know, they probably wouldn't be able to sing it, you know, or a song that presented much more difficult music for them to sing. So yeah, you can teach a kid like a parrot, and then they think that's it. And then these kids that go on tours and win prizes. And then Adele just had an operation on her voice. She's 25. She has nodes already because she's over-singing. She's pounding her voice. She's a natural singer, but she needs instruction now that she's singing industrially. It's like knocking a tree down with a dull blade. You know, you're getting in there and you're singing and you're pounding and hitting notes, and you don't really know what's going on in your throat. You're damaging and abusing the cords and the vocal apparatus. And I explain in the book how that happens, what it means to damage the voice. Why is it getting damaged? This is not an invulnerable, you know, made of steel apparatus in your throat. It's delicate.
And I love how you wrote about good diction, mm-hmm. A very important function, of course.
Well, good diction is a byproduct of proper technique. So if you are singing correctly, your diction should be decent. And if you're focusing on your technique, it's all about breath and air. The air is the carrier of the words. So if you're not projecting, if you're not breathing deeply enough and then processing enough air, your diction is going to be, it's going to be dribbling out of your mouth instead of being projected out like a fire hose, which was what us opera singers do.
I love the dedication that you have in your book. Talk a little bit about that to those folks who have helped you out through the years.
Well, I have a number of musical fathers that have been, unfortunately, no mothers. It's all been men that have who have trained me and who have given me the great advice. I have at least three or four voice teachers in there. Louis Quillico, Bill Schumann, Gary Burgess, who used to be the director of the Greater Buffalo Opera Company here in Buffalo. Great coaches, Christopher Makatsouris at the Academy of Vocal Arts, and even Joe Mankowski, who was an organ teacher here in Buffalo. I didn't get vocal training from him, but I got musical training from him. That was when I was 9 or 10 years old. So I've had a series of men in my life that over the past 50 years that have, 40 some years, that have molded what I am today. So I wanted them all to be recognized.
Valerian Raminski, always a pleasure to speak with you, and thank you for sharing your information on starting to sing.
Thank you so much for having me.